This is Ozarks at Large on your public radio station, KUAF. June is Brain and Alzheimer's Awareness Month. With that in mind, for our continuing series on aging and health, we asked Brandy Schneider, Director of Aging Services at University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Schmieding Center for Senior Health and Education, to come back to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio to discuss matters related to how our brain works as we get older. She says normal changes begin early into adulthood.
Really starting at about age 30 to 40, we start having more issues with just certain types of recall. And part of that is because it takes more effort to get information into our brain when we hit about 30 or 40. So if we're not really focusing on getting that information in there, we can't get it back out because we never got it in there well in the first place. But some of the common things that we see as we get older, things like name recall. So someone walks up to you and maybe you just saw them a week ago, maybe you've known them for a long time and their name just won't quite come to you. That's pretty common as we get older. You know, typically that name comes to us later, probably about the time we walk off and leave that person, the name will come to us. Things like walking into a room and forgetting why we went into that room. And part of that is just because we're focused on so many things at once now. So we get up, we start to walk into a room to do something, but we get distracted by a commercial on the TV, or we get distracted by someone talking to us, and we get in there and just don't remember what it is that we went in there for. Things like being in the middle of a sentence and not remembering what word you want to say next. And that's pretty common. As long as you can substitute a word for that word or describe what it is you're trying to say and still keep your place in the conversation, that's something that's pretty common and it's not something we worry about. We become concerned when you can't substitute a word or you just completely lose track of the conversation because you can't figure out what word comes next and then how to follow along with that conversation.
Do you ever talk to clients or people who are perhaps concerned about their brain health because of some of the symptoms you've just talked about?
Yeah, all the time. And so, you know, part of just having a conversation about that is setting people's minds at ease that a lot of this is just normal, typical as we get a little bit older. But, you know, I always tell people if it's bothering you and you really feel like it's impacting your day-to-day life or it's impacting your stress level or your anxiety, then always talk to your physician about that. You know, it could be things as simple as medication interactions that are causing some memory issues, medication side effects. But if it's bothering you, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy then. So you worry about something that you're forgetting. So then that causes you to worry more, which adds stress. So then you focus on that more and then you forget more because you're stressed. And so if it's really bothering you, go ahead and talk to your physician about that. And there are some basic, simple tests that they can do to really determine if that's something that you need to be concerned about.
How long have you been working with aging and brain and things like that?
So I've really been working with people with dementia for about 25 years, starting as an activity assistant, and now I'm working more directly with families and people with dementia.
Have you noticed that public perception or consideration of Alzheimer's or dementia or related issues has changed in your 25 years?
Yeah. So I think that people are becoming more aware of it, or at least more willing to admit when there's an issue. There's still some stigma associated with memory loss. You know, it's a fear we all have. What happens if I get an Alzheimer's diagnosis or I get a diagnosis of another type of dementia? So that's a fear we all have. But I think over the past several years, as more public figures are coming out with their diagnoses, people are accepting it more and they're starting to recognize that this might not be something that's normal and I need to go get that looked at. And we're just getting that more, I think, into the public light. So it's becoming less stigmatized.
And I'm assuming that we know more in the 25 years that you've been working with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Alzheimer's disease compared to other diseases is still relatively new, but, you know, we are learning more and more about the brain every year and what that looks like, how it affects and impacts other parts of our body and our health. So, you know, as we get more funding dollars for that, we're going to see more and more research on the brain. But the brain is a complicated part of our body. And so it's not just, you know, one thing that causes dementia-like symptoms. We're starting to notice there are a lot of different competing factors, a lot of things that are affecting how our brain ages and what is normal and what's not normal.
Do we know of anything that can perhaps not stave off Alzheimer's, but are there practices, are there
things we can, because I've read, you know, do a crossword puzzle a day. Do we know for sure some things help our brain health as we get older?
Yeah, so there's been more and more research really on prevention and risk reduction of cognitive loss, and that's probably really where research is headed, where the future of dementia is headed, is looking at how do we reduce our risk, how do we prevent dementia from occurring, cognitive loss from occurring. We think that approximately about half of the cases of Alzheimer's disease are preventable through modifiable risk factors.
Half?
Almost half, a third to a half, yes.
Well, we should talk about these factors then.
Yes, yes. So the number one factor, and I think I talked about this the last time I was on here just for general health, is exercise. So getting your heart rate up, but really exercises that are kind of multifactorial. So things like yoga. So you get your heart rate up a little bit, but you're also causing your brain to think about the different positions and poses that you have to be in. Anytime you're causing your brain to think, then you're helping to build new connections as well. So exercise is number one. Also healthy diet. So the diet that we really recommend as professionals who are working with people with the brain is the MIND diet, M-I-N-D.
Okay.
And so that really is eating all of those foods that we all know are good for us. The green leafy vegetables, fruits, nuts, lean meat, so chicken, fish, staying away from those processed foods, staying away from sugar, staying away from butter, you know, all of those things that really contain some of those unhealthy products and healthy fats. So just really trying to eat all of those green leafy vegetables and things that are good for us.
Okay, so far, it's more or less common sense.
It is.
Move,
it is.
Exercise.
Right.
And eat what we know is good for us.
Exactly.
So far, I feel good about this.
So far. Yes. So the next thing is cognitive stimulation. So exercising our brain. So things like crossword puzzles, reading, learning new games and new information, lifelong learning. So learning something that you didn't know before, doing things that are challenging to you. So if you are a really good dominoes player, dominoes is still good for you, but you know, maybe learn bridge, do something that helps to connect and improve those connections in your brain. So just cognitive stimulation. The computer games that you find on AARP or Lumosity, all of those are great too, just to help exercise and stimulate your brain.
And it sounds like you're actually also kind of just talking about general curiosity.
Right.
Learning new things.
Exactly. Just learning new information. Anything, you know, small talk with neighbors, just, you know, talking about current events, anything that causes you to have to stop and think about something is good for your brain. And then the last thing is social connections. So not being socially isolated, going out, meeting people, talking to people. You know, we know that depression, stress, anxiety, all of that can lead to poor health and poor brain health. So just being a social person and going out and talking to your neighbors. And that doesn't mean you have to be in a big group setting where there are lots of people, but just interacting with others and not socially isolating yourself. And it makes sense. When you put all of those four things together, you have a really healthy attitude, a healthy practice. When, you know, maybe you do yoga with some friends, so now you're getting your socialization, you're getting your heart rate up, you know, maybe you go out for a healthy lunch or smoothie afterwards, and you're combining all of those things, and then that's really the optimal.
The good thing here is that much of what you just said can be low cost.
Correct.
I mean, exercise, movement, if you're able, you can do that.
Right.
Social connection should be, for most people, free.
Right, right.
Cognitive stimulation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all of these things are really simple concepts, easy to put into practice. It's just, you know, we have to make sure that we are consciously putting all of those things into practice in our day-to-day life.
And as you mentioned, it's believed now about half of the cases of Alzheimer's are preventable.
Right. And we know that means that you don't start those things when you're in your 70s and 80s. You know, it's never too late to start. But we know that the key to prevention means we're starting those things in our 30s and 40s and really living a healthy lifestyle throughout our midlife so that we're healthier as we get older.
I know that if you go for an annual checkup, the doctor, she or he will listen to your heart, your lungs, those sorts of things. Are there checkups like that for your brain?
There are. So they will often do mini mental exam of some kind, especially during your annual Medicare wellness visit. So as we get older, that's more intentional. They will often do that as part of your annual Medicare visit, just to take a baseline and test your memory. Still, probably the best source of information about your brain comes from yourself and knowing that, you know, I'm just not remembering as well as I used to, or reports from friends and family members. You know, the trick is if you don't remember what you don't remember, so sometimes it's hard to self-report those things that you're not remembering. But if a friend or family member is telling you that they noticed something, that's, you want to take that seriously and talk to your doctor about that.
And that's the next step, to go to your doctor?
Yeah, always talk to your primary care physician first and just have them do a good medication review, check out any physical things that might be causing that, depression, hormonal imbalances, you know, your thyroid, just anything like that can have an impact on your brain as well. So I'm just making sure that they get all of that taken care of. And then if they notice that there's something more to that, or they've ruled all of that out, then looking at getting into a neuropsychologist to do a more specific, more in-depth diagnostic testing then.
Is there a resource where we can go and learn more about Alzheimer's and some of the things we've talked about?
Yeah, so ALZ.org is the Alzheimer's Association website, and it's a fantastic website to just give you information about the brain and signs and symptoms of dementia.
Brandy, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Brandy Schneider is Director of Aging Services at University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences Schmieding Center for Senior Health and Education. And our conversation about the brain and Alzheimer's is part of our continuing series of discussions about aging and health.